Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with episode 185 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Sorry, I thought this was my other podcast, Weird Scenes Inside the Gold Mine, an All Doors and Jim Morrison podcast. I apologize. I thought this was the episode where we spent 3 hours talking about Touch Me, and now Jesus. All my notes are useless.
Like, part of me is like, I would listen to that, and part of me is like, I'd listen to like 15 minutes of it, and then just rant about it for 6 days.
I know,
but,
right? Yes.
I'll be honest with you. I'd rather listen to that, like a three-hour podcast dissecting a three-minute song, than here is our podcast that's like 15 minutes to half an hour every week of 1 minute of a film. I still hate those things so much.
Yeah.
I hate them. I will always hate them. I hate them in concept. I will not listen to them on a plane. I will not listen to them on a train.
I wonder if there's a podcast that is simply about my like analyzing minute detail other podcasts that the host hates.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So as we talked about briefly, I watched a lot of stuff this week.
Yeah, well, you got HBO Max, so I figured there would be...
I got HBO Max. I watched a few things on that. And I'm very confused by HBO Max and its existence in a lot of weird ways.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly relating to their release schedules, because they've done something weird.
Oh.
But, you know, as a service, like, it's fine. Like, it has, like, weird little gaps, because it's, like, the first service that I've seen... And again, this is meaningless. This has nothing to do with how the service works, right? But, you know, you can create multiple profiles for multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
And on HBO Max, you can create, like, an adult profile or a child profile, and I assume the child profile gets, you know, less stuff. Like, they're not like, okay, well, child profile, all you get is Game of Thrones. Like, that's, I'm pretty sure that's not how that works.
Nothing but Grave of the Fireflies, just 24/7.
But it's the first service I've seen in years that does this, that doesn't let you choose an icon.
Hmm.
Like, it's just, like, the name you give it in a circle.
Wow.
And I'm not saying they should have, like, you know, like, the Disney Plus thing of, like, here's all the shit we own. No, of course not.
Yeah.
Like, that's a Disney thing, and I don't care about that, but, like, even Netflix is just, like, here's, like, a robot or a dog. Like, just something so you can visually tell quickly.
Yeah, you know,
HBO Max is, like, fuck your visuals.
You know what my Netflix icon is? It's the new Schneider from One Day at a Time.
Nice.
And it's weird because the show is canceled. I mean, it's not even on Netflix while the old seasons are, presumably. But
right.
Yeah. So it's weird that I've got this icon from a show that Netflix canceled and is not producing new seasons of.
Yeah, that is a little weird.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are weirder things in the world, obviously.
Oh, sure, but, sure.
Yeah.
My Netflix icon, weirdly, is Voltron.
Very nice.
I forget what my Disney Plus one is. But anyway, HBO Max, I have no fucking icon. I don't know why, it just stuck out at me.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of originals, and they did an interesting move. So they announced, like, the originals, they're releasing 3 episodes to start, and then an episode a week.
Hmm.
So, like, you can just, you know, like, kind of mini-binge some of it, and be like, oh, I do like this enough to see the next episode. And then they dole it out weekly. Except they're already changing that?
Hmm.
So one of the shows that I watched the first 3 episodes of was Love Life.
Yes.
Which is their anthology show where every season will have different main characters. And it's basically like following people through like a certain period of time as they go through different relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the first season is Anna Kendrick, and it, like, follows her through her 20s in New York. And they drop three episodes, and then Thursday is supposed to drop the next episode, but they've announced that, like, Thursday they're going to drop the next 3 episodes, and then the next week they'll drop the final 4.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, I guess, but you don't have time to make more right now. Maybe you shouldn't be doing this.
Because you're just burning through stuff way too quickly right now, like at the worst possible time for you.
Yeah.
I don't get the move, other than they're like, people like it. It's like, okay, then make them wait. Like, this works.
You know, I'm starting to think that the advent of all these streaming services has completely fractured, like, the minds of all the people who've programmed TV, in particular blocks, one episode per week or whatever, or per day. And so they're just throwing anything at the wall right now. Just right. Like, let's do it here, let's do it there. We got spots there, we can do it here. People will like it. And they're slowly, like, their brains are disintegrating under quarantine, and that's just what's happening.
Yeah. So, let me tell you about Love Life. It is both, like, it's kind of, this sounds damning, but I don't mean it this way. It kind of comes across as, like, generic early 2000s romantic comedy.
That's not a recommendation, okay.
Like, it's nothing special. It's nothing bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly watchable.
Ah, fair enough.
But it isn't doing any, I mean, and not that any, you know, every show has to do something unique, but it's just, it's doing enough to be like, I like this, I'll keep watching it,
mm-hmm.
but not enough to be like, oh my God, have you seen this show? Like, it's not particularly well written or directed or anything, right?
So they've aimed for watchable mediocrity.
Well, I think they've aimed for kind of like Love Actually.
Oh.
Like, just the, here's your, like, kind of feel good, like, romantic comedy thing, which I'm always down for a good romantic comedy, but as a series, and, you know, like, we're gonna tease the future a little bit here and there, and, you know, we're gonna do stuff and blah blah, and it's fine, it's absolutely fine, but it's absolutely middle of the fucking road. But it also, for like, and this thing is set in New York, and I'm not sure if this will make sense eventually, but there is this woman with a British accent whose name I looked up at one point. I don't remember. She's, you know, somebody. not like a huge name or anything. Who's narrating it.
Oh.
But because it's this thing that's, like, right now, I guess it's an anthology. Maybe the other ones won't take place there. But right now, this one's taking place in New York. It, like, it starts, like, 2012, I think. And it's going to go up to, like, I'm guessing current days. But having this weird British woman narrate it is making it come across totally weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I keep either expecting it to go kind of Hitchhiker's Guide on me, and it's not.
Hmm.
You know, it's just...
Yeah.
And because it's this weird, like, British woman, like, it's supposed to be calming. I don't know. But it feels completely out of place.
Yes.
And so it throws the tone of the thing. And the narrator, outside of, like, one moment in the first episode where they do kind of have the character, like, walk through a scene and then walk back through the scene, obviously years later, like, at the end of the show. And there's no, like, it's a little disconcerting, like, it's a little choppily done without the narrator.
Hmm.
The narrator's fairly fucking useless. Like, not really doing anything worth having a narrator for yet. So I don't know what they think that they're doing.
Huh.
And again, like, it is, you know, an anthology show, so, like, the first season, it stars Anna Kendrick. Who knows who the next season will have, but it does have, in a reoccurring role, big in at least the second episode, Scoot McNairy.
Oh, I like Scoot McNairy.
I do, too. And I'll tell you, like, when I saw him in the first episode, I was just like, I'm a little bit more on board with this show now. Mm-hmm. Just because it has Scoot McNairy, right? And then he was big in the second episode, and he was doing that Scoot McNairy kind of, like, I'm a decent guy, but, like, I'm kind of going through shit. And oh, that Halt and Catch Fire, like, slightly bottled thing mm-hmm. that he does. And I'm just, again, enraptured by Scoot McNairy. And then he wasn't in the third episode. I'm like, but Scoot McNairy. Like...
Yeah, cool. I remember when I saw him in the movie, I think, Monsters. That was that, like, zero-budget sort of... it was known for being basically edited on a guy's, like, MacBook at the end of every day's shooting. I can't remember Gareth... It's either Gareth Evans or Gareth Edwards. It's
I don't remember.
He went on to direct the Godzilla movie on the strength of Monsters, I think.
I think that's Edwards, but
yeah,
I mean,
and it was a good film, like, especially given the resources they had. But really, the main thing was, like, it might have been one of the first roles for McNary. And I'm like, this guy is great. And then I found out he was on Halt and Catch Fire. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the first time I took notice of him, like, I'd seen him in things.
Mm-hmm.
But it always just kind of been like, oh, there's that guy that's kind of fun to watch. But, like, for some reason, he didn't really stick out. For me, it was Halt and Catch Fire.
Yeah.
And I think it's true, though. Like, everyone in Halt and Catch Fire, with possibly the exception of Lee Pace, who, I mean, I already knew Lee Pace, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Carrie Bishy, who I knew from Scrubs, but it'd been so long, and you can't recognize her from one to the other.
Yeah, I know. She's one of those actors.
Yeah, and Mackenzie Davis and Scoop McNairy, like ever since Halt and Catch Fire, I'm like, if any of them is in anything, I'm like, I will watch that.
Yep. Yep, I'm with you on that as well. I mean, also, of course, Scoop McNairy, I recently watched him in Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, Ultimate Edition.
Oh, that's right, he's in
Ultra
that crap.
Okay. Yes, he plays an angry guy with no legs.
I mean, sure.
Yes, I'm like, I've never seen anybody else play an angry guy with no legs who gets blown up by his own wheelchair. Oh my god, that movie sucked so bad. I just can't believe it. Yeah.
But I also realized while watching this that, like, I mean, I don't even have a pitch for it type of thing, but I have a TV show I'd like to see, or a movie. I'd kind of like to see TV shows because I want to see it grow over time, but or a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite a comedy, like a drama, you know, like, I hate the term dramedy, but that sort of thing. Right?
Yes, yes.
About two brothers that for whatever reason are forced to, like, just deal with each other, like, hang out or live together or whatever it is. And I want it to be Scoot McNairy and Jake Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Playing brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like tonally they would match so well.
I love that idea.
But, yeah, so Love Life is fine. You know, it's one of those things of, like, if I didn't have HBO Max, I wouldn't be like, well, I need to get this to watch it. But I have HBO Max, and so when there's a new episode, I'll totally fucking watch it.
Yeah.
I also watched the first episode of the Elmo talk show.
You know, this I have never heard of, and I'm very curious about. Yeah. I don't know how I missed out on this one.
It's one of the things they were actually, like, hyping up for HBO Max, because they were just like, hey, it's a thing. It's called the Not Too Late Show with Elmo.
Okay.
It's a 15-minute episode show. And, like, it starts with, like, Elmo, like, cleaning up after dinner with his parents. And they're like, oh, your show's about to start. Remember, but, like, not too long, because then you have to go to bed. And then, like, he goes to, like, this talk show, and it's, like, Elmo trying to do this talk show with, like, Cookie Monster as his, you know, Ed McMahon. And there's, like, a band, and he has, like, you know, a guest and then a musical guest. And at least in the first episode, it's, like, he gets called to go, like, you know, brush his teeth and change into his pajamas. So he leaves so that the musical guest can play, and then he comes back in his pajamas and does, like, a goodbye song. It also cuts to the production room where there's some Muppet who's trying to do production. And, like, the production, like, the camera occasionally goes weird. And then you cut to the production room, and, like, the person in charge is just like, why is this happening? And it's like, why are there just chickens running this? And then she calls for, like, Ernie, who makes some joke. Like, Ernie's kind of, like, being Fozzie in this, which is weird.
That is a little odd.
Like, you know, after she gets rid of the chickens, she's like, you know, I need a crew that's on the ball. And then later, like, the camera starts going weird, and you cut back, and there's a bunch of balls and a seal on a ball. And she's like, what is this? Why is this seal? And Ernie comes back and says, you wanted a crew that was on the ball. And I'm like, why is Ernie being Fozzie? And I guess it's Sesame Street, right? Like, they can't use the Muppets.
Right.
As you the Sesame Street Muppets, they're using Ernie for it. So it's like a nothing show. Like, the first guest was Jimmy Fallon, who was like, you know, you ask questions, Elmo. Like, teaching Elmo how to do a talk show.
Wow. That sounds very on-brand for an Elmo talk show.
It is. Like, yeah. It's very on-brand for an Elmo talk show, and I feel like 15 minutes is about the right length, because around, like, I don't know, 5 minutes in, I was like, this really needs to be over soon. And they had, like, Katie Musgraves come out and, like, do a song,
cool.
She did Rubber Ducky.
Nice. I imagine she would sing the hell out of that.
Right. And then, you know, like, almost like, you know, how did you learn the guitar? Like, here's a picture of you as a kid with a guitar. And, like, you know, and she's like, and then I was like a teenager. I started doing this. Like, we have a picture of that, too. And it's like a random picture of her, like, as a teenager. And almost starts kind of like yelling at the crew member. And he's like, that's not a picture of her with a guitar. And she's like, it's okay. I'm right here now with a guitar. Like, it's fine. It's, like I said, it's cute, but I just feel like it might wear thin.
I
don't know who the audience is.
Is
the audience kids? Because there's also an audience in the show that's made up of Muppets and, like, kids and teenagers.
That is weird.
Right, like, they've been promoting it heavily, and I'm like, is it for, like, adults who are like, I like late-night talk shows, and look, it's Elmo, that's funny. Is it for kids? Because do kids give a shit who, like, Jimmy Fallon is? Like, I just, yeah. I can't figure out where they're aiming this at, and I don't think they know.
You know, it's
so weird. I haven't watched the other episodes yet, honestly.
Well, I think you should, and maybe report back.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna get back to it, but I watched one, and I was like, okay, and I was like, I'll try Love Life, and then I watched, you know, a bunch of episodes of that. And then I'd been curious about the McMillions documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing is both amazingly great and one of the worst documentaries I've ever seen in my life.
You just swung both ways there heavily.
I totally, like, and that's the problem, is every episode I watch swings both ways.
Huh.
Like, it's six parts, and I feel like they keep kind of, like, messing with the narrative to be like, you gotta keep watching to find out what actually happens.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's something very TV about it instead of documentary about it. Like, it's a fascinating story.
So what
but
is
they're
the story?
Overproducing it.
Oh, okay.
It's, if you remember, the McDonald's had the Monopoly games.
Yes.
And, like, somebody, like, left a tip with the FBI, and some agent, like, took it and ran with it. That was like, there's a bunch of fraud here. And if I remember the actual resolution right, because I remember the story when it happened and unfolded over the course of, like, decades, and was finally released, like, every single million-dollar winner was, in fact, like, fake. Because it was, like, this guy who, like, worked for the advertising firm that did this and had an in to the security, like, the secure printers, and then, like, found a connection to the mob.
Wow.
And I believe, like, at one point they were just like, okay, it's just, like, some of these tickets. And it turns out that, like, all the, like, huge prizes, he was just taking them all and, like, doling them out to the mob. Like, it ended up being, like, the third most, like, profitable thing for the mob in history. Like, up there with, like, Al Capone.
Wow, that is fascinating.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And I just wish that this was telling it better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, getting out of its own way.
Yeah.
But it's still a fascinating story, so I don't know, like, it's kind of worth watching, but I don't know if it needs 6 fucking hours.
Mm.
Like, so far the first 3 could have been about half as long, and that's what's killing me.
Okay. I mean, you watch, like, say, Unsolved Mysteries, and they keep on repeating bits and, like, stretching out, like, negative information over the course of the entire episode, but it's all structured around, like commercial breaks.
Yeah.
So it needs to come to a peak, and then, like, drop for a commercial, and then, get you to the same
place.
That's
the thing, right? This needs to, like, keep you interested for an hour, and then make sure you come back for the next part.
Exactly.
Although my favorite detail so far is, like, this little teeny, like, it's a throwaway line, and I tell you, this was my favorite detail in this entire thing to date. So at one point, they're trying to figure out, like, how many of the ex-winners, like, might have been part of fraud, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, what we can do is we'll, like, set up a fake meeting that won't ever happen. In Vegas for all the past winners, because you could, of course, deny being in an ad and all this. But this way we can contact them and interview them beforehand and see, like, about their stories. And so they're going to do this thing, and they have someone who works for McDonald's, who's part of this, whose job it was to record all the initial, like, interview calls. Except she didn't, and try to get them to go to Vegas, even though she knew that wasn't going to happen. Except, A, this is, like, the early 90s, so it was, like, this big, like, tape deck recorder. And so that's A. B, she had to take it literally everywhere with her because she didn't know when the calls would happen. And because the FBI's involved, she couldn't just not record it. So she was like, you know, I even take it to Thanksgiving because you never know. Right. And because she always had to have this huge recorder, right? And she didn't want to let them know she was recording, so she always be like, oh, can you hold on like 1 second and then flip the tape type of thing. But are you ready for, like, here is the sentence that destroyed me.
Okay.
Like, I had to carry this thing around all the time, just this big recorder, in my black McDonald's briefcase.
McDonald's?
And that's when I stopped and realized that higher-ups at McDonald's, at least in the 90s, were given, like, black, like, hard-sided, like, attaché briefcases.
With a McDonald's logo?
Right. And I was just like, that is, like, vaguely dystopian.
It kind of is.
And I don't know, like, I just fixated on that, like, sentence so hard. Granted, it was 5 in the morning, but I fixated on that sentence so hard.
Chris,
like, I paused it for a second just to drink
hours.
It in.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. Hmm. But again, like, it's a fascinating story. It's just not really well done. You can look up other accounts of the story, and they're probably better. Like, just, you know, like an article about it that you don't need to watch the whole thing.
Hmm. Yeah,
I will probably keep watching it just because I'm halfway through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it sounds like it's worth a watch, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's so long at this point. Like, it's 6 hours. It doesn't need to be. So yeah, I did all that, and then I also watched a movie, which we can talk about later if you want. We'll get back to other stuff.
Okay. Ooh, a movie. And I too will talk about a movie that I watched later. And it's not Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, Ultimate Edition in Ultra HD 4K.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
You had to get the whole title out legally.
Just. Otherwise, Zack Snyder will come and beat me up. Probably.
He'll cut you. That's how that works.
He'll cut me. He'll
lift That's where
me.
That phrase comes from.
Yeah.
But there was a new Stargirl.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that one. Yeah. Good Stargirl.
Yeah. I think we both mentioned, like, that it feels like they're just, like, kind of like Batwoman did, right? Like, they've learned that, like, the Berlanti show's like, we're not holding back anymore. We're just going to it.
Right.
Which was nice. It still really does feel like somewhere between, like, the Berlanti superhero stuff and 90210, which is appropriate.
Kind of. Yeah. I've read a lot of pieces on Stargirl, and almost everybody who writes about it is trying to do that same thing. They're trying to, like, say it's like this and that. And the worst one I've seen might have been from the AV Club that said it was a one part Supergirl, one part Riverdale. And I'm like, it's neither part neither, you fucking moron.
Right. And the only reason I really, like, tossed them together, because it really isn't, you know, like Riverdale or 90210 or anything like that, is just because they're trying to keep the focus on the teen stuff and occasionally the high school.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's some high school stuff. There's some, somebody pointed out, like, the sort of the similarity to Smallville with that sort of relentless focus on the small town. And that, I'm like, yep, that tracks.
Well, what fascinates me is this is supposed to be the new version of DC's Earth 2.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. But Earth 2 in the comics was always set in, like, around World War II. And then eventually they moved stuff forward.
Right.
And then they merged all the Earths, blah, blah, blah. So when Johns did his JSA series, it was, you know, there were some JSA members who were still alive because superheroes and magic and whatever, and they weren't, like, 90. But he tried to give it that, like, 1950s, late 1940s, old school tone.
Right.
And I think it's fascinating that this is doing that. Like, this is kind of, like, on the one hand, they're like, the JSA was 10 years ago. And on the other hand, there's cell phones.
Yeah. I mean, it's clearly not quite our world. I mean, it sort of is, but there's a sense in which there's some, like, that question of tone, it sort of, like, not elevates, but certainly shifts it just to the side of reality. I mean, let alone
It reminded me of Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's...
Like, if they didn't do the time shift, type, like, you know, but, like, the Marty in Hill Valley thing.
Right.
In the 50s.
That tone.
Of,
yep. Yeah, that Zemeckis Americana tone. That's very much where it's going.
Also, the sewing room class thing was perfectly done.
Yes, that was really nice.
I did enjoy her, like, I'm going to make this costume. Oh, wait, this isn't just normal, like, cotton.
What I liked is that you could do it, like you could like sew and cut this material, but it was really a bit basically just like annihilated a room full of sewing machines to make it happen.
Yeah, and like it sells what the costume is, right? Like it's not like full on bulletproof, but it's some help.
Mm-hmm.
It's tougher than normal stuff, which at the very least is when it doesn't just like rip every week type of thing. It will make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and of course the stripe suit, which is mostly practical effect when you're seeing it standing still and kind of some movement.
Yeah, and it's funny because there are moments where you could tell, or it looked, there are moments that looked like CGI, but largely it looked like what it was, which was a practical effect.
And it's just gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Really is. Yeah, and it's so not steampunky necessarily, but it's just gears and like things like sort of gouts of steam and sparks. It's really tactile, which helps.
Yeah, and what I love is that they kept the thing again. They just kept the thing from the comics to make this work, which is that you know the flying car, which I forget what it was called originally.
Lola.
But you know. I Skyman, because I'm sorry. Can I just tell you the one weird thing that keeps throwing me on the show?
Mm-hmm.
Sylvester, the Star Spangled Kid,
mm-hmm.
eventually changes his name to Skyman. He was never Starman.
Oh, it's always weird.
And it doesn't matter. Stuff. They're just collapsing stuff for simplicity's sake.
Sure.
But I always think it was Skyman. I think it was like the Skymobile, or whatever. But the car, the flying car, was something that Pat built.
Oh.
And so you see, like, when he mentions, like, it's you know, based off of, like, I built this thing out of old cars. I'm like, yep, that's kind of what you do, isn't it?
I love it. And I also love, I'm trying to remember what Stargirl, the name she comes up for Stripes. It's like subatomic, tactical robot internet pat enhancer. I know that there's an actual similar, like, name for it, but it's, yeah.
I'm trying to remember what the original was. Yeah, in the comics, it was Special Tactics Robotic Integrated Power Enhancer.
There we go, yeah.
And in this, it's Subatomic Tactical Robot Internet Pat Enhancer. I think the TV one is better.
I gotta say, the just dropping internet in there, just in like a word, and then she's like, yep, nailed it.
Yeah, and just Pat Enhancer is funnier.
Yes. Yeah, and it's they didn't forget to give, I think a lot of teen shows just, they kind of forget to give their main characters like a personality, but I think they've done a good job. I think Breck Bassinger, I can't remember her name, I think it's something like that, who plays Stargirl, she was a great choice. She just does this sort of...
Yeah, Breck Bassinger.
She looks... I mean, she doesn't look like a 25-year-old pretending to be a teenager. She actually looks like a teen. She's got that great sort of combination of, like, Bershon eye-rollingness and yet a kind of that sort of that quality of optimism that you need for this show. And it all just works out nicely.
Yeah, I'm also really happy that they never lose her sense of agency because...
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to the concept, frankly, that Pat is her sidekick.
Yes, exactly.
And the only way to do that is to set up a power dynamic that isn't, like, rough, that isn't like, you know, I'm in charge, fuck you. But is more, you know, we're going to work together, but, like, I need this. Like, this is my show. And I don't mean that in a TV show sense, but, like, this is, you know, her thing. And he is there to help her because he cares about her.
Right.
So I think they've done a really good job of that, of not losing her in the mix really early.
Because
mm-hmm. it'd be easy to do, because it's kind of like his old fight and old enemies of that he knows. And just there's so much stacked against essentially this being her show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really happy that they've managed to keep that. I'm very happy with the show.
Another thing I quite liked... And I was worried about this in the pilot, when she faces down Brainwave, and I thought, well, are we going to do this like plausibility stretching sort of like series of episodes where he does where he's trying to find Stargirl but inexplicably cannot.
Right.
Even though she's like new in town, vaguely fits the description. Oh, and he has telepathy. I just thought this is going to be a little ridiculous, and I just thought, well, I guess I'll just prepare myself for that. And nope, he figures it out immediately, and I'm like, good.
Yeah, weirdly, I had in my head a way for them to avoid it that I thought they were going to go for based on comic
yes.
stuff, and they totally didn't.
Oh, interesting. What were you?
Because in the comics, Brainwave Jr. becomes a hero for a while. And actually joins like Infinity Inc. and all this way before Stargirl. And if I remember, he eventually goes bad for a bit, blah, blah, blah. But like for a while, he's the. And I was like, okay, well, his kid, he keeps like, he's pressuring his kid. And now you can see like his kid will probably become a bad guy for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But like in the comics, because he doesn't, realistically, I'm like, I could see his kid being like, no, I do have powers, and blocking that.
Hmm.
And setting up that. But I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah.
Because again, it would have stolen focus, weirdly. But of course, we're going to get Solomon Grundy soon.
Yeah, that's...
Which leads me to hope that they're going to do the old Starman thing from the 90s, which, if you've never read the Starman comic from the 90s, the Robinson-Tony Harris comic, you should.
Okay.
It is actually where that cosmic staff first showed up, because the original Starman stuff used to be... Here's a weird thing from the comics. Originally, it was a cosmic rod. It was like the short little like wand that Starman used. And then Star Spangled Kid into Skyman, he actually had a cosmic belt, which is what that big red belt that she's wearing is.
Okay.
That like gave her like enhanced strength. And then in the comic, she eventually gets the cosmic staff because the current Starman retires for a lot of good reasons. But his book is great, and it does lead to his like retirement, and it's just such a great book. But and they name check Ted Knight, who is the original Starman, who builds all of this crap.
See, I just when you say Ted Knight, I just think of
I know
too close for comfort.
I know
yeah,
I
yeah,
do
yeah.
too.
Yeah, and Maritana.
But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I like the show. I think they're doing a good job with it. I think they're having fun condensing the mythology down to. Because, again, if you don't, you have, like I said, like you can already see how you have, like, 17 branches that lead up over the course of 40 years. You don't need it. You don't.
Yeah. No. You don't.
Like, I hope we eventually see Jack, because Jack Knight, as Starman, like, is that from that run in the 90s, is one of the best characters in comics. And one of the few superheroes who legitimately retires. To, like, take care of his kid. Like, he just retires.
Yeah.
So... hopefully we get him. But the point I was going to make was the Grundy thing in that version of Starman was that every time Grundy gets killed, he comes back with a different random personality. Like, sometimes he's the big hulking monster. Sometimes he's this childlike guy who just wants to help.
How did I not know this?
And you never know what Grundy you're going to get. And the comic still does that now, and I'm hoping, because Johns did use that once or twice, I'm hoping that's the Grundy we get.
Oh, that would be...
Like, right now, we have big, hulking, evil Grundy, and then something, like, you know, that Grundy gets killed, and he comes back, and he's, like, nice and gentle.
I think they have to. Like, that's... You can't leave that lying on the table.
Right. And John's, like, loves it anyway, so it's a good chance.
That's super cool. There's something else I was going to say that a moment ago that I liked. Oh, I also liked when Pat is... going, like, naming all the members of the former JSA, he says Flash. I'm like, there's always a Flash.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, when you see the that opening bit, I was really excited, actually, that they had a bunch of green flame around.
Mm-hmm.
Because the original Green Lantern, you know, the Earth 2 now, you know, Green Lantern from the JSA, like, his ring did effects that were always, like, it was always a green fire that could take solid form.
Right.
So I'm like, no, they're committing. Like, they're going to do a Flash eventually. We're going to get, like, a lot of this, I think.
Yeah.
Even if it's just in flashback, you know.
Absolutely.
And I know that, like, from just cast photos, that they're going to move toward doing what was Infinity Inc. and a new Justice Society. Because we've seen photos of, like, the new Dr. Midnight, the new Wildcat.
Right, yeah.
And these are all... like adhering to the Infinity Inc. comic stuff from the 90s. So, oh, 80s. And I'm here for it because I love that book.
Oh, that's great. No, so,
there's a lot to look forward to with this show.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I am looking forward to the next episode. But anyway, we should move on to
we should move on. Yes,
the
there was Harley.
There was Harley, and that was fucking hilarious. But that's every episode of Harley Quinn at this point is just absolutely hilarious.
And heartbreaking.
And heartbreaking. You know, it strikes me actually. Remember when we first, as we said before, one of the first things we kind of thought was we wish it didn't try so hard and have so many gratuitous swearing. But when I realized the last couple of episodes, they really actually have cut down on that.
Yeah.
I think they've figured out that they don't. I think they've just shifted as they've grown more into the characters. They realize they don't need to just like throw around gratuitous like violence and swearing.
Well, and it's funnier when you wield it like a weapon.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
On the other hand, I am really hoping, because again, like right now with the HBO Max stuff and only Doom Patrol moving, they're not moving Harley, by the way.
Oh.
Like, and when I say moving, Doom Patrol will be on both, and apparently it will be on DC Universe a day earlier than HBO Max, which is funny.
Okay.
Like, they're doing the same thing with Stargirl on CW. Like, if you know what, if you're one of the idiots who still subscribes to the DC Universe thing, you get it a day early. which I appreciate, because I get to watch it a day early.
Sure.
But they're not putting Harley on HBO Max, which is a huge mistake.
I agree.
Because they're eventually going to put the Birds of Prey movie. I'm like, you idiots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my god, you have your feeder right there. but you know, like they're supposed to be doing the season 3 of Titans eventually, and a Titans spinoff possibly. And another season of Young Justice, and this will all just live on DC Universe, and I'm worried about the future of this, you know, thing as a platform.
Mm-hmm.
But also, god damn it, when are they going to announce my Bane spinoff for the Harley Quinn show?
If Bane is like a therapist, I can't even imagine.
I just Bane. Going about doing Bane stuff. I don't care.
I agree.
Bane, hang out with Judge Reinhold. Why not?
Sure. Yep, I'm down for that.
I too was a judge once. You know, just like... Oh, Jesus Christ. I did not expect... Because, and again, comic-wise, if you ever read Gail Simone's Secret Six, that is, like, in comics, the best version of Bane you'll ever see.
Oh, nice.
Because remember that Bane is supposed to be incredibly smart, first of all.
Yes.
But it also like gives him this weird paternal relationship with another character. So you get this kind of like softer, caring Bane who will still put people's heads through walls. And is ridiculously smart, because that's Bane. And it's just the best Bane in comics. And this version is just the best Bane, I think, even above that, right? Like, this is just the Bane I want. And I do. I need a whole fucking series. I need, like, weeks of just... Like I said, just Bane wandering around, doing stuff. Like, on a road trip. I don't care.
Yeah, no, I get you.
I don't know why I want him on a road trip with Judge Reinhold specifically, but I'm fine with this.
Just getting angry at baristas, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, just have Bane just do a series of remakes of Judge Reinhold movies as Judge Reinhold.
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen Judge Reynolds. I don't know if you've ever seen the HBO series In Treatment, which basically it's got Gabriel Byrne as a therapist who sort of follows around all these people, couples, individuals, and it's a really good show. It's based on an Israeli show, but I seriously think Bane as a therapist, just dealing with people's problems, would be.
Here for it.
Yep, that'll be really hilarious.
Although, I am also now, because again, putting him in Judge Reinhold, I do kind of want to see Beverly Hills Cop, but with Bane as one of the cops.
Right.
But what did he do to our tailpipe? Like, just...
Oh, shit. That's good.
This is your mansion?
I have a pit that is better.
Oh, shit, that'll be good. The other thing I enjoyed about the most recent Harley Quinn episode, the one that takes place on the on a resort on Themyscira. Not just that the plane there and like all the vehicles are invisible and keep on getting hit by birds, which is just a...
Oh, Jesus, that was killing me.
Hilarious running gag. Just the fact that Harley and Ivy cannot stop winding up in bed together. I mean,
yeah.
Which is kind of what you expected, but the way they do it is I was actually really happy that you don't get to see Harley and Ivy having sex.
Right.
Because it's... They could easily go there, given their mandate. But instead, you get them saying, you know, you've done everything for me, you're the best, we're best friends. And then switch to, like, the next morning. So, it, I don't know, makes it about their relationship.
Yeah.
I thought, good choice.
And I do like how they, you know, every time they wake up together, like, it's... They stay in character, which sounds weird, but you know what I mean? Like, they could push it to, let's have weird shifts because of this.
Right.
Yeah, I'm like, again, like, I did not expect to be watching the Harley Quinn animated show deeply invested in the character relationships, like, where is this going to go? How are they going to do it?
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Deeply invested in Bane. Like, these are not things that I expected from this show. I figured, like, it'd be, like, a fun cursing thing, and maybe I'd like it, maybe I'd be annoyed by it, and it'll be whatever.
That was my, yeah. That was...
But again, like, I have not really enjoyed, and I figured out what did it. I was never a fan of Harley Quinn. Like, I kind of liked her in the animated show, and in the comics it was always like, okay, like, I get it, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't quite my thing, and it was in the last couple years when they started moving her away from Joker.
Right.
And, you know, letting her kind of reclaim the, like, I have a PhD, motherfucker. Like, putting her... giving her control and letting all of her shine,
mm-hmm.
and letting creators play with all of that, and losing the hugely toxic relationship, but admitting that it happened, at least, opened the door. You know, there's Stepan Sedgwick's Harley.
Harleen, yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah,
yes. As far as I know, by the way, the next one will be a 3-part Ivy series.
Oh, okay.
And then it will, I think, supposed to be, right now, a 3-part Harley and Ivy. But there might also be a Catwoman one in there instead. I don't know. But he is doing more of this.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I think this is, I mean, the only thing I'd known by Sedgwick before that was Sunstone. Which
is fantastic.
Yeah. And so doing I think, Harley Quinn is... kind of a natural fit for Sedgwick.
Yeah. You should also look up, by the way, he has an older graphic novel called Death Vigil.
Oh, okay.
Which is tons of fun. And on his Patreon right now, if you contribute, like, I think it's like $6 a month, you get all the updates for Sunstone and all of the Death Vigil updates, because he's finally doing Volume 2. But he will also, of course, knowing him, release it all for free. I think he's doing it on Webtoons. And then maybe eventually in print. But yeah, Death Vigil is something you would enjoy.
We'll look at that. So
Harley, yeah. Like, recently has become this great character, right? Like,
yeah.
they've unlocked it. And it's strange for me, because in my head I'm still like, but I don't like Harley Quinn. I mean, hell, I think it's... Who is it? Is it... Jesus, hold on. Let me look this up really quick. This is going to take a minute. Sorry.
That's all right.
There was the original, like, big Harley comic that was rather episode of the Batman animated show early on. Was called Mad Love.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and eventually they let Tim and Dini do Mad Love as a comic.
Mm-hmm.
And they recently did it as a novel.
Oh.
And why does it... Oh, there we go. And, are you ready for who wrote the fucking novel?
I'm ready.
Pat Cadigan.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, okay, they let fucking Pat goddamn Cadigan loose on, like, on that? I kind of need to read it.
That is, yeah. Wow. I'd watch that. I mean, I'd read that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pat Cadigan, wow. Sorry, I'm just... That was not the name
mind-blowing,
I was expecting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I saw it in a store, and I was just like, oh, they did a Mad Love novelization? Okay, I guess, whatever. And then I noticed, like, Pat Cadigan's name, like, the fuck?
So, did you read it?
I haven't. I recently bought it on the Kindle, but I haven't, honestly, since the quarantine began, my brain has been in a weird place, and I haven't really been able to read anything.
Yeah, I understand
that. Keep trying to, and I keep trying to read, like, you know, nonfiction, because I should be writing a novel. But even, like, fiction, like, I just can't focus. So, I'm still trying, and, you know, but it's high on my list. Like, I have a huge stack of fiction I need to get to.
Oh, God, me too. Me too.
But yeah, anyway, so Pat Cadigan wrote a Harley adaptation novel.
Sweet. Oh, man, okay, that sounds like a worthwhile
sort of
diversion.
And... trying to think, like, is there anything else? Or, I mean, there was that Legends episode.
Yeah, there was that Legends episode.
Jesus. Is this going to be a thing now? Like, after Legends of Meow Meow? Like, we've now gone 2 for 2 in the last couple years of Legends, you know, in different types of genres?
Yeah. I think...
Like, is this going to be a thing?
It feels like, I think it's, it feels like a bit of a pattern now with Legends. They get their reality shifted out from underneath them in the penultimate episode, completely messes them up, and then they have to get back together again.
They did that in the first season, too, didn't they?
Yeah. Although it wasn't done nearly as well.
No, of course not.
Yeah, because I remember they turned Ray into like a janitor. So I can't remember. It was just typical. Yeah, it was just typical stuff. But now they're. I mean, now they're just like, we'll do whatever the fuck we want. This episode was such a hall of mirrors. It reminded me of some of the weirder sort of like movies from the 80s, like. Almost like, do you ever see the sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show, Shock Treatment?
No.
Oh my God, not a good film, but they're sort of, but the character Brad and Janet are trapped in this like, sort of TV studio, and they're sort of like in this endless sort of shifting set of like genres, and it's a really sort of disturbing movie, but I sort of kept sort of flashing back on that.
I will say my favorite note of this episode, well, my favorite two notes, are, of course, you know, like, Tosh is still, like, the MVP of this fucking show at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we first get Zari 1.0, which, did you notice on the screen we see the script at one point?
Yes.
And it references her as Zari 1.0?
Yes.
But we get Zari 1.0, and the first thing she does is just, like, stuff food in her face.
Mm-hmm.
But that, like, there's a throwaway little line somewhere, I think, where, like, it's mentioned or kind of hinted at that the reason she can, like, see through all this is because Gideon prepped her because of the time loops.
Oh, I didn't catch
that. To see through, like, big reality things. And I thought I heard, like, something that hinted toward it, at least. And I kind of love it. I'm not sure where this show is going to go with the two Zaris, because they can't maintain it.
I mean, yeah, this is an orphan block. Come on. I'm not sure either. But, I mean, I've given up on predicting anything that Legends of Tomorrow does, like, a while ago. So, like, I thought, how are they going to bring back Barad? It's going to be this big thing. Nope, he's just going to walk through a door in a fake
sitcom. Did you happen to read... this was Guggenheim's first directing of any show in the Arrowverse ever?
Really?
Yeah, and I read an interview with him that mentioned a few things about how the show was done that make me, like, just hysterical about it. A, he apparently had cards for every single scene with notes of what characters knew what when. Because you film out of order, so they had to know.
Right.
You know, like, well, in this scene, you have Zari 1.0, and you have, like, these people know that, and these people know that, like, you know, because it kept shifting. But the other was that the Shatner impersonation that Katie Lotz does
yes
was not in the script.
Oh, nice.
She apparently just started off and just did it, and everyone just lost their shit.
It is that was the probably the best worst Shatner impersonation of all time. I don't know how else
it
to
was
put it.
So great. It was only topped by the reveal of Don. And the hair flips.
Yeah, the hair flips were pretty Don. Fuck. Yeah, I'm glad they gave Dominic Purcell at least one of the funniest bits in the whole show. Also while sort of like acknowledging that he just never gets the same screen time that the rest of them get.
Right.
So it's, I mean, I guess he does, but it's never, he's always sort of off to the side, and this just kind of like really sort of hung a bit of a lampshade on that.
Yeah.
A subtle lampshade, but nonetheless. Yeah, that was pretty much everything about that episode was just a delight.
Right down to Nate's like, I actually like the goop, but that's not important now.
That's right. Oh, that scene, or that one scene where he's like covertly like spooning up the blue mush into his mouth.
Right.
Yes. Ooh, they get the blue mush. Yeah.
Oh.
And I love that the Fates just immediately institute this sort of horrible sort of mid-20th century totalitarian regime, which I got a huge kick out of that.
Yeah, and there's one episode left to kind of push us into the next season and resolve this. And God, and again, Legends, don't even try to predict it. I was a little, not concerned, I was a little surprised that there were no puppets.
True.
And no yeah. Bebo.
Yeah, the Bebo-less bit was, because I thought you got to bring in Bebo. Maybe they're saving their Bebo for the finale.
Maybe. I just felt like the Mr. Rogers bit.
Mm-hmm.
There could have been a Bebo.
There could have been a Bebo. And as I said to you in email, I found the fact that the no Brandon Routh bit, but using the Mr. Parker's cul-de-sac TV show, that did not sit completely well with me.
Yeah. Yeah, it felt off. Like, I kind of wonder if they were like trying to figure out how but they can't bring him back. Mm-hmm. Because then you have to keep using him, like you'd have to have a whole thing.
Right.
But I wonder if they even considered it. Like, they probably did. Could we, just for this one?
Yeah. Who knows? And Matt Ryan's portrayal of the button-down butler was really fucking good.
Yeah.
You sort of forget, that, you know, you get used to seeing a character just do one particular role. And you're just
right.
Like, oh my god. Guy is great.
So, weirdly, I feel like this is linked in a way that it really isn't. I did see a movie, by the way. Now, mm-hmm. We can talk about this, or we can talk about the movie you saw. You tell me. I'm good for either.
Why don't we start off, we can talk briefly about the movie I saw, then we can go
All
ahead
right.
on into
Do
the
it.
Movie you saw. I saw the movie The Vast of Night. First time... to the debut of director Andrew Patterson. I watched it because it was getting like really, really good reviews on various sites. So I was kind of curious. It's, the setup is very simple. It takes place in, I think a Texas town in 1957. And it's a 16-year-old girl who's named Faye. And she's running the switchboard at night, and this odd sound starts coming in, and people calling in the line gets cut, and then people start saying that they're seeing something in the sky. So it's an alien, you know,
right.
It's a UFO, you know, feature, And so she and the night radio DJ, a guy named Everett, sort of begin to investigate and sort of figuring out, is there something in the sky? What are these things? What exactly is going on? But the story itself it's not that compelling. I mean, it's definitely kind of the excuse for Patterson and the actors to just tell the story in an interesting way. The story itself is just like, it's a frame. And they on which they can hang their efforts. And they even sort of frame the entire movie as an episode of Paradox Theater, you know, Twilight Zone. So it starts off, you're sort of watching this sort of like flickering television introducing Paradox Theater, doing a pretty good Twilight Zone riff. And then it goes into the movie itself. And act breaks are sort of marked by sort of scenes that actually seem to take place on the flickering television, and then it moves out again.
Gotcha.
But there's and one of the things that all the reviewers said is like, this Andrew Patterson, the director, he's a self-taught filmmaker. He basically funded the movie himself, and never went to film school. And apparently, according to him, he just watched a lot of movies and just took a lot of notes and said, why are they doing things the way they're doing? And the result, like, I think if this is the guy's first movie on no budget, he's going to be able to write his own ticket. I mean,
nice.
chances are a second movie is going to be a huge budget like thing that's probably going to suck because he won't have any control. But still, it's quite something. There's a pair of shots somewhere in the middle of the film where the radio DJ says to Faye, Everett says to Faye, I need you to, I need you to do stuff and call me back in 10 minutes. Set the clock, 10 minutes. And of course, the next shot is a single unbroken shot that's her basically just like plugging wires in and trying to like talk to people for 10 minutes. And it's all the shot does is just push in very slightly. You don't even really notice unless you notice. You don't even notice it. But right. Then she sort of gets up. Then the shot breaks, and then she gets up to have a smoke in the doorway, and the camera basically in one unbroken shot sort of moves out of the building, goes down the street, into the high school gymnasium where there's a basketball game being played with most of the townsfolk there, circles like in and around the players, up into the stands, out through a window, and then back down onto the ground, and like then glides down another part of town where it comes to Everett also having a cigarette. And it's basically one of those moments where you're like, how the fuck did he do that? And apparently he did it with a go-kart. He put the camera on a go-kart, mostly, and then just used probably a gimbal to like steady some shots and probably spliced a shot together at some point to go out the window.
But still. That's nuts.
And the real credit to the film is that it doesn't come off as just pointless showboating. It just feels like this organic attempt to like build this atmosphere by sort of showing like how all these figures are kind of, you realize how small the world is that they all inhabit, that it can all be captured in one tracking shot. And what they're dealing with is something unknown and huge. And it just puts everything into this beautiful perspective.
Nice.
Yeah. Good film. And really, really, really quite striking. I'm not sure. I think reading all the reviews probably raised my expectations a little too high. But if I hadn't known anything about it, I would have just been like, what the fuck? I was just mind blown. Anywho.
Understandable.
Yes, yeah. But I understand you saw a movie possibly as good as The Vast of Night.
I don't know if I go that far, but sure. So, I done rented Sonic.
Oh, Sonic le Hedgehog.
Yes, in fact.
I wonder how you say hedgehog in French. Anyway, keep talking while I find out.
It was cute. It was funny. It was way better written than I thought it would be. You know, it wasn't like a piece of trash. Like, it's eminently watchable. It's at times, like, funny and, you know, you'll get a chuckle.
Really?
It's never anything special.
Huh.
Like, I think, like, if you like Sonic a lot, you'll like the movie a lot more, obviously. But yeah, it never becomes anything like, oh my god, I need to like watch this again and again. But it's a solid, fun, like stupid movie, right? Like it's basically like Sonic comes from this other world and he has this power and he has to flee that world and he ends up on Earth and he's hiding out for years in this small town where he's basically like spying on people because he's really lonely.
Oh, okay.
So like, you know, he like James Marsden's cop character, he basically like stands outside his window a lot while him and his wife watch movies.
Because so he feels like lawyer. He's
well, and you know, they pass off as like he's kind of like a kid and he's just kind of really lonely, so he's like, this is as close to as he can have to have friends.
Oh.
And they keep bringing that home, and then like he uses his power weirdly and people notice it, and of course Dr. Robotnik, who works with the government, comes by and hunt him down and everything happens. And it's like I said, like it's an enjoyable bit. Jim Carrey, you know, his entire remit is chew scenery, and he does.
Fair enough. I figured as much.
Ben Schwartz as Sonic is great, except every now and then he'd have a line that sounded like a line that could have been written for Jean-Ralphio. And so when I would hear it, I just thought Jean-Ralphio. Because it's not like he's doing anything with his voice, really.
Right.
So that was a little weird. James Marsden manages to not look like he's depressed with what's become of his career. And I'm kind of proud of him. But this might be a highlight. I always feel bad for James Marsden. Like, he just never gets great gigs, does he? I don't know if he's just not capable of them or if just no one likes him, but he never gets the good gigs.
You know, you're not wrong. I mean, I've seen him in some good roles. Like, he's played the character in the first season of Dead to Me, for example. But he's always kind of a smarmy jerk, or he's just in things like Sonic the Hedgehog.
Well, I would say, like, he was in Superman, he was kind of useless and nothing in it. Yeah. Westworld, he could have been given something to actually do, and he was never given anything to actually do.
This is true.
X-Men, he played a terrible version of Cyclops and was killed off camera. Like, I think the closest I came to ever seeing him in something that he had fun doing, like Sonic, like he obviously had some fun doing it, was 30 Rock.
Oh, yes.
But even then, he wasn't really given much, comparatively.
We should do a deep dive into like the bad roles of James Marsters.
There's a lot of
Marsden. Marsden, sorry, Marsters is.
He was on like 13 episodes of Ally McBeal.
That's yeah, sure. Fucking show.
And he'll be in the Stand miniseries as Stu Redman. So maybe this is his shot.
Maybe. Maybe. This will be the role that propels James, that gives James Marsden the role that he's always known he deserved.
Yeah. Like he'll be kind of leading the cast in a lot of ways. So who knows? I don't give a shit. But, you know, it has a good cast, the Stand thing. Like, Catherine McNamara is in it.
Oh, okay.
Whoopi Goldberg is in it.
Huh.
Amber Heard. James Marsden. So, yeah.
Sounds all
like,
right.
I thought, somebody else I thought was in it, and maybe they're not? I thought, what's his name from True Blood was in it?
Which,
I think, Heather Graham is in it for, like, a minute. Yeah, Alexander Skarsgård is Randall Flagg. There you go.
There we go. Yes. I think I knew that as well. It's funny because I mean I read The Stand, and when I was younger, I read the original version, then I read the extended version of it, and it's always like, this is not great. Oh, and then I saw the miniseries and I'm like, this is even worse. But I'm always sort of up for The Stand, and I don't know why.
I'm not a huge King fan, and every now and then I would try one because I think we talked about this. And like, The Stand is one of those I've read like once or twice, and it just always shocks me how weirdly sexist and racist it is.
Yes, that's true.
And so I end up marking out. So I'm like, I kind of want to watch the miniseries because I'm like, well, if they're smart enough to take that out, maybe it'd be fun.
They probably are.
I figure they are. So yeah. We'll see. We're a little bit past the hour mark, but there was one more thing I want to talk about that we forgot to mention.
Oh, do tell.
S.H.I.E.L.D. is back. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back.
Oh, for Christ's sake, yes.
And they came back. Not only did they come back swinging, but I love that they completely resisted even trying to do a last season on S.H.I.E.L.D. They're just like, nope, fuck it, just jump on it, just fuck you, get in. Get in, losers, we're going shielding. Just, they did not give a shit. And I kind of love them for that, because I was a little bit confused for like a minute or two. And it took my brain to be like, oh, right, this, and then, okay, then that happened. But I was like, I just liked it, that they just trusted you enough to be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, oh, exactly. No, because I found myself going, what the hell happened last season? I was like, what's that thing with Fitz? Is he dead, or is he in, like, floating in space?
Like, the whole thing at, like, the end of last season where, like, Gemma shows up, and it's been years, and, like, yeah, you forgot all that. I forgot all that.
Yeah. But here we go. And, you know, Coulson is back as a LMD. They just started, and I really enjoyed this this episode. And I loved, you know what I love the most about it? That title card.
Oh God, yes.
Between this week's Legends of Tomorrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this is the week.
It's a good week for title cards.
It's a good week for title cards.
I also just like that again, like the Koenig bit, like just they're tying their past and their history and the moral dilemma. Which feels very much like what S.H.I.E.L.D. always wanted to be as a show. Of the, to save everything, we have to do what? You know, it was just, it was so well, like, drawn out.
Yes.
Although I was really confused when they were like, and it's just, it's a casting thing. When they're going on about, like, well, this and this guy and who could this be? Suddenly having Nora Zehetner come in for, like, one scene and get killed threw me completely.
Yeah, I was... Because I saw her name, like, in the, you know, the guest starring bit.
Yeah, I missed it.
But I'm not sure if she's dead, though. I think... It feels very odd that they would, like, just bring her and kill her right away. I'm going to assume that she survives being shot.
I don't know. I mean, IMDb has her down for one episode.
That's
worthless. But she'll be in the Right Stuff TV series as Annie Glenn. So hey. It's like she's such a great actress. And yet I realize like I haven't seen her in much.
Yeah, I mean she was in Heroes. She was in she was in Brick, obviously.
Right, well, she was in Brick, and then she shows up briefly in Brothers Bloom.
Right.
And yeah, like she was in Heroes for a minute or two. She was on Mad Men for like a minute. She was like in an episode of Warehouse 13. Like, and that's it. Like, she just seems to just pop up randomly. And I don't usually see her in stuff. But, like, it's always great when she is in things.
Yeah, it's funny because as soon as I saw her show up on this episode of S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm like, well, this is a perfect fit for Zehetner.
Right. Like, and they've been talking about Hydra. I was like, yes. Like, Zehetner is like, you know, the mastermind behind Hydra would have been so perfect for the season.
Yeah, because she's good at doing, like, cool evil. Understated evil. That should be her brand.
So we'll see what happens there. But, like I said, I didn't see her name in the credits because I just wasn't paying attention. She just suddenly shows up, and I was like, what now? And I understand she's not a huge name. It's just like my undying and longstanding love of Brick is probably what does it. But I always think of her as a huge name. So it was like, it hit me like one of those things of like you're watching like a CSI show and suddenly like Danny DeVito shows up and you're like, well, he did it. You know, type of thing. When she's not a big enough name to play that role in the show. But it hit me like that just because,
That's exactly it.
But definitely feels like S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to go out on its highest note yet.
Yeah, I think there's going to be. I thought this was just great. I am stoked, as nobody says, for the next episode.
Also, I swear, like every like couple episodes, like five or six episodes, I think, I end up liking Deke more because I really didn't like that character when he first started.
Oh. He was sort
just annoying.
There. Yeah. Yeah, he gets better.
But like now, he's just fun.
Also, all the RCMP jokes that they make, I don't know why.
Oh, God, that first one?
Yeah.
Like, he has no face? Yeah, happens all the time up in Canada.
I was like, damn. Thank you. Thanks for the Canadian jokes, guys.
That, like, the weird little, like, just S.H.I.E.L.D. is having fun and they know it because they're so bored. Like, it's that thing that, like, actually hit the show at one point. Where they're just like, yeah, we've seen everything. We're not shocked by it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When they just refer to, like, the Chronicoms that have, like, posed as the Chronicops because they're all posing as cops. I'm just like, they're so blasé about this at this point. That they're like, funny nickname time.
Yeah, we went to space, traveled through time. This guy died, like, 3 times. I don't know. Fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
this is not going to shock us. And I mean, at the end, I'm saying, so we have to save Hydra to save S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm like, well, that you're putting in pretty blunt terms, but that's no worries. That's we know what's happening. So
right. I also like that fairly early on they address the fact that they are no longer in the normal MCU, without ever having to say it.
Oh.
When they're like, you know, well, the you know, like depends on how you think of time travel, like the multiversal theory.
Oh, right.
And I was like, yep, okay, because they left the movies behind.
Right.
And they had to have. But they can't say that because they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how would they know?
They wouldn't.
Right. But they kind of also have to just kind of, like, nod wink at the audience, like, oh, we know.
Yep.
But that also opens the door for them deciding, like, you know what? Maybe we do change time.
That would be all right. I would love to see that.
That could be fascinating. Anyway, we are a bit past the hour mark, so we should probably play some music, and I have a movie in mind to watch for next week's episode that you're going to want to hear about.
All right. Well, let's play that music.
All right.
Music.